This is Jordan Sekulow. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, the North Korea summit with President Trump and the leader of North Korea is underway, and the House falls far short of the veto-proof majority necessary to override the president's national emergency declaration.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
As I've said many times, and I say it to the press, I say it to anybody that wants to listen, I think that your country has tremendous economic potential, unbelievable, unlimited. And I think that you will have a tremendous future with your country, a great leader. And I look forward to watching it happen and helping it to happen. And we will help it to happen.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
One of the possibilities, certainly, and it's much discussed, is the end of the war, some kind of a peace treaty, which would, if people think it's just symbolic, but what could come of that is actually pulling those armies away from each other on the demilitarized zone and possibly even reducing the size of those armies.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. A key vote last night in the House of Representatives. We prepared you for it yesterday. The House took up a legislation. It's called a resolution to disapprove President Trump's use of the National Emergency Declaration, which he is authorized to do under a 1976 law that was passed by Congress. And the way that works is that Congress can, under the statute, pass a resolution disavowing the national emergency. If Congress passes it, so ultimately the House and the Senate, it could go to the president's desk. The president can veto it. And then, of course, Congress can override the president's veto with a two-thirds majority of votes in both the House and the Senate. So a key vote last night in the House. No surprise that a Democrat-led House, Nancy Pelosi's House of Representatives right now, voted to push back and block President Trump's national emergency declaration. So it did pass 245 to 182. Here's what is key. They were 40 votes short. 40 votes short in the House of a veto-proof majority. So it pretty good indication. You're not going to find every Democrat voted yes for this. So you're not going to find 40 more Republicans who decide to vote against this one time to then override a president's veto. So what do we know on that front, on the national emergency front? I think this is very key. And I'll go to Andy on this first. We know, Andy, that on the national emergency front, that the recourse the left would like to take in Congress is going nowhere.
That's right. Non-approval may have passed by a simple majority. It goes to the Senate. Who knows what's going to happen there? I trust the Senate will not do the actions that the House took. But nonetheless, if the president vetoes this resolution, as you said, there is not any way that that veto is going to be overturned by the supermajority needed in both houses of Congress. And I think, therefore, that the veto of the resolution will prevail, and the president's taking of emergency action, which, Jordan, you know he had a right under the statute to take, and under the Constitution, under Article 2, and his power to provide for the common defense is going to prevail. I know a lot of the votes that the Republicans made were in fear that emergency declaration might someday come into the hands of a left-wing president, and I think they were apprehensive about that. But nonetheless, President Trump's action was within his statutory power and within his constitutional prerogative.
What's interesting is that only 13 Republicans, and I'll name names when we get back, only 13 Republicans in the House of Representatives voted with the Democrats. So while there was, you know, issues about a national emergency, remember, this is something that Congress authorized the president to be able to do. And they have a recourse option. They can pass these resolutions with veto-proof majorities. The House failed to do that, which means though it will go to the Senate, and there are Republicans there that will certainly join Democrats on that vote, that they have to have veto-proof majorities in both the House and the Senate to override the president's action here through the legislative process. So it's, of course, they'll go through the court process as well. But we will name names when we get back on Jay Sekulow Live. We'll take phone calls 1-800-684-3110 and update you on what's going on in the talks between the president and the leader of North Korea. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people, the Green New Deal, and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a 5-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. Expose socialism. 2. Prepare critical legal analysis. 3. Show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4. Battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5. Hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now, online, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. If you are just joining us, let me set the stage for you. Last night, the Democrats, the House of Representatives, voted on that resolution to block the emergency declaration by President Trump for funding border security and the wall. Now, that national security declaration only accounts for about $3.5 billion of the $8 billion that was identified by the administration, the Trump administration, as ready to be utilized now to construct border barriers and walls where DHS has deemed them to be necessary. Now, it was no surprise that a majority Democrat House would pass this resolution because, unfortunately, this issue of border security has become so partisan. So it passed. The resolution passed. But what is key is that, like any piece of legislation, it can be vetoed. Now, it's still got to go to the Senate, but here's what's key in the House. In the vote, it was 245 to 182. Every Democrat voted yes, so against the president, and 13 Republicans joined them. But they were 40 votes short of the two-thirds necessary to overturn a president's veto. So even with what happens in the Senate, the idea that Congress is going to be able to prevent the president's declaration of national emergency through the legislative process has kind of died last night because in the Democrat-led House, and remember, then it's the Republican-led Senate, but the Democrat-led House, they did not convince enough Republicans to join them and support this. So every Democrat voted to try and stop the president, which they can under the law that they passed in 1976, and 13 Republicans joined. I'll go through those 13 in just a minute, but I want to go to Harry Hutchinson. We're also talking North Korea. I'll take your phone calls on both these topics, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. Harry, this idea, again, that really where this should be handled, if there's a disagreement with the use of a statute by Congress, Congress should be able to come together, even in a bipartisan way, and handle it because they're a co-equal branch. Instead, what we're already hearing from those Democrats is, well, we still got the courts to fix this for us.
I think that's correct. I think the Democrats are looking at the courts as a fallback position, because they have effectively conceded that the president, A, has statutory power, and we believe the president has inherent constitutional power, and he indeed has a sworn obligation to protect the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And so we have faced a crisis, an incipient crisis on our southern border, which has gotten worse with drug trafficking, human trafficking, and the like. And we face the prospect of a continual slew of invasions, caravans, if you will, from Central America. So the Democrats have authored a resolution condemning the president. They achieved success in terms of the vote, but the president also achieved some success because the Democrats failed to demonstrate that they have sufficient votes to override the president's veto. This also undermines their legal argument, because if they dislike the president's exercise of his emergency power, they have the legal right to override it. And that is the way forward, as opposed to going to the courts. I believe at the end of the day, they will find at least one judge who is sympathetic to their cause at the lower court level, some district judge in the Ninth Circuit or somewhere else. However, I believe that the Supreme Court will uphold the president's exercise of his national emergency powers, and this national emergency power declaration will stand, and it should stand.
If you are concerned about how your member of Congress voted, first of all, a total of 427 voted. Now, you can have up to 435 House members. There's always vacancies and issues with people who aren't there, but that's a pretty big group right there. Every Democrat, so if you're a member of Congress, in the House of Representatives is a Democrat, they all voted on this resolution to take the power away from the president here, to disapprove and end the national emergency. So if you're represented by a Democrat, very easy to figure out. Only 13 Republicans joined the Democrats. So I'm going to read their names and their district, their state, so that if it's your congressman, you know if they took the Democratic position on this vote. Justin Amash from Michigan. These are all Republicans who voted with Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in the House for Michigan's 3rd congressional district. Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania's 1st, Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin's 8th, Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington State's 3rd, Will Hurd of Texas 23, Dusty Johnson of South Dakota, Thomas Massey, Kentucky 4th, Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington 5th, Francis Rooney of Florida's 19th, Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin's 5th, Elise Stefanag of New York's 21st, Fred Upton of Michigan's 6th, and Greg Walden of Oregon's 2nd. Those are the 13 Republicans who voted with the Democrats to block the emergency declaration and funding for border security in the wall. So I think it's important for our audience to know every Democrat voted for that. Those are the 13 Republicans who did as well. 1-800-684-3110 is the number. If you want to talk to us on air, that's 1-800-684-3110. We're also talking about North Korea. It is very historic. The second meeting between the President of the United States and the leader of North Korea is going on as we speak, and then more substantive meetings tomorrow as well. Let's go right to the phones. Robert in Maryland on line one. Robert, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Yeah, hi. How you doing, Jordan? I was calling because I wanted to ask you, why do you believe that President Trump chose Hanoi, Vietnam to hold the summit with the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to denuclearize North Korea?
I think there's a lot of keys here to discuss. I want to go to Skip Ash, our senior attorney with the ACLJ, and also in our military law division. I mean, the idea, Skip, you served two tours of duty in Korea. The significance of the location of Vietnam, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it was a very wise choice, because the longest war the United States ever fought prior to this war on terrorism we're in now was in Vietnam, and it ended with a great deal of discontent in the United States. But once we established relations back with the North Vietnamese, we now have normalized relations, and the North Vietnamese, or now the Vietnamese, have prospered that way. So I think he's sending, the president was sending a message to Kim Jong-un to say, look, we've had bad experiences with other countries before, but once we make peace, we are a good friend and we can assist. And I think by going to Hanoi and seeing the thriving economy there, I think that sends an additional message to Kim Jong-un that he might want to take the president of the United States up on his offer.
Yeah, I think that's important. Symbolism is very important in all these things. Symbolic gestures. Here is a country that 50 years ago, I remember I was in college, we were bombing, I mean bombing to death, literally in a terribly engaged war in Southeast Asia. Now they're our friends. We have diplomatic relations. We have trade agreements with them. And what the president was trying to do was to show the North Korean leader that even though we were mortal enemies and lost thousands of American troops there, nonetheless, we're willing to repair that situation. And we can do the same thing with you, and you can prosper as the Vietnamese have prospered. And I think it's also important that the president yet again went to Asia. Now, this may have been because Un was not willing to travel outside of Korea or far from Korea for reasons probably of security and otherwise. But the president is making this effort by twice traveling to the Asian continent to meet with the leader of North Korea. These symbolic gestures make the situs, the place of the meeting, Hanoi. Because when I was, you know, as I said, as when I was growing up, this was the enemy, Hanoi. My God, this was the word that, right, that meant death and destruction can now mean peace and friendship.
And the president discussed this. Take a listen, Byte 28.
As I've said many times, and I say it to the press, I say it to anybody that wants to listen, I think that your country has tremendous economic potential, unbelievable, unlimited. And I think that you will have a tremendous future with your country, a great leader. And I look forward to watching it happen and helping it to happen. And we will help it to happen.
And again, I think that symbolism of Vietnam, again, that has become a trade partner. It's not necessarily an ally in every single issue, but it has become an economic partner with the United States, thus bringing prosperity. And that you can begin to heal wounds, but also immediately impact the potential for good for the people in North Korea, for the region. But we'll talk about the pitfalls as well. These are high stakes, the most high stakes negotiations when you're talking about dealing with the North Koreans. And it's been tough for every administration. President Trump was the first president willing to face-to-face, and now he's doing it for a second time with the North Korean leader. We come back. We'll take your calls on North Korea, your thoughts. Do you agree with the president's strategy of directly engaging with North Korea? 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people, the Green New Deal, and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a 5-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. expose socialism. 2, prepare critical legal analysis. 3, show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4, battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5, hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org.
So we have addressed the vote yesterday in the House of Representatives. This was a vote to block the emergency declaration by President Trump and the funding, some of the funding, for border security and the wall. As you know, the president declared a national emergency. Under the National Emergencies Act of 1976, the House and Senate can pass resolutions to, again, block the emergency declaration. But just like any other piece of legislation, they could be vetoed by the president. He's already said, and the White House has made that clear, that if this passes the House, which it did, and then the Senate, that he would veto it. Now, as you know from your civics class, the House can, and the Senate, Congress, can override a president's veto. But it requires, the Constitution requires, a two-thirds vote in both the House and the Senate. This is where Nancy Pelosi failed, and those who opposed the president failed last night. Though they passed the resolution, they were 40 votes short of the two-thirds majority necessary to override a veto. What does that mean? Well, it means they've run out of, first of all, every Democrat voted for it. So they've got no outstanding Democrats to add to that number, you know, to decrease the 40. And they've got Republicans on the record now, and only 13, and we read those names already for you, only 13 Republicans joined the Democrats. They're not going to find 40 Republicans additional to override a president's veto. So what does it mean? Effectively, the attempt to legislatively stop the president from declaring the national emergency that we support and utilizing funds to build border barriers, border wall, where DHS is deemed necessary, that battle to stop that will not be fought out very much in the legislative branch, which is where it should be. So instead, the legislators will turn to the courts, and the lawsuits have already been filed. So we wanted to update you on that. We got a great blog on it at aclj.org. There's a lot happening with North Korea as well. I want to go right to the phones, talking about the significance of the location of this meeting between our president, President Trump, and the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, in Vietnam. Jerry called in from Rhode Island online too. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hello, team. I thought the same way Robert did from Maryland, and after the first meeting, why they picked Hanoi and Vietnam. And then I looked into it. Vietnam is actually a vacation destination because of how much it's been restored. So following exactly what Colonel Ash and Professor Hutchins said, except for aesthetically, he has a model. Look what's around you, Kim Jong-un. Look what's around you. Just 40 short years ago, it didn't look like this. This is what you can have. This is what we're prepared to help you do. And he's a developer. President Trump is a developer.
Well, and this has been, Harry, the message all along. It's not that we're going to immediately be best friends. We're talking about nuclear weapons and again, a state of war currently with an armistice agreement, but not a peace agreement between the North and the South. We still have thousands and thousands of troops there. I'm going to skip on that in a moment. But the economic side of this argument, that peace through economics, in a sense, is key, and Vietnam has been a good example of that.
I think you're precisely correct. So if Chairman Kim is prepared to engage in incremental interim steps toward complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, if he is willing to enter into a peace agreement with the United States, tantalizing economic opportunities await. And I think Vietnam is a clear example of the economic opportunities that could be in North Korea's future. One of the things that President Trump did while he was in Vietnam prior to meeting with Chairman Kim is that he discussed trade issues with the leader, with the Vietnamese president, and the United States president, President Trump, signed a trade deal worth over $21 billion. So a brilliant economic future awaits the North Koreans if they are prepared to give up their ambition to be a nuclear power in the world. But I also think that's going to be very, very difficult for Chairman Kim and the hardliners in the North Korean regime.
Let me go to Skip Ash. Skip, again, with your time in the military and time in Korea specifically, the idea is, from what you know from just the work that you've done too, this economics approach to potentially denuclearization, I know it's a road that can be fraught with much peril, but is that something that can work with, you think, this newer North Korean leader who's younger and trying to hold on to this unitary power?
Well, I think it can. You know, I think one of the smart things about what President Trump is doing is, in one sense, elevating this gentleman to be a member of the world scene. In effect, what he's doing, he's increasing his ability internally to put down some of the opposition, because now he is developing an argument that, yes, we had to have this Juche self-reliance thing for so many years, but now we've won. In effect, we forced them to the table. We brought them to the table. We're the victors, and now we have the opportunity to open up our economy and open up our society. They're going to do it very carefully, because he doesn't want to have a challenge within the political realm of North Korea. But they have a past agreement with South Korea, where the South Koreans invested in the North and the North provided the labor, and that provided a good outlet for them. And they also tried to open up an area for tourists coming in from Russia and China, again, on an experimental basis, to find out whether the people could come in and increase the economy. So they've been taking some baby steps in that direction. And if they look at what happened in Vietnam, they look at the offers being made by President Trump, and I think he's serious, and they recognize he's serious, that they're more apt to be able to do this. But again, we have to recognize the North Koreans will proceed very slowly internally, because they do not want to lose control of their population.
We've got a second half hour coming up. People are holding on. I know Edry and Lois as well. We'll get to your phone calls. We really want your thoughts on this. Maybe you served in the military like Skip. You may have spent time in Korea. This idea of steps towards, one, peace on the peninsula, the Korean peninsula. And again, so that is still not a war that is over technically. A lot of our resources there, we have thousands and thousands of troops stationed there and have been stationed there since the Korean War. The idea, again, of a new economic partnership, and how that kind of changes the world when you've got really North Korea being utilized and also utilizing the Chinas and Russias and Irans of the world. What happens if they kind of turn to the West and turn away from the East? There's a lot of ramifications there for our national security. Number one, more than economic, is our national security. Not having a regime like that with nuclear weapons that could reach the United States or our allies, but two, the long-term economic impact as well. We want your thoughts. Do you agree with the president, not just meeting with Kim Jong-un once, but now again in Vietnam, meeting again, and another round of meetings will be tomorrow between these two leaders. Do you agree with the position of the president and the foreign policy to kind of engage this way? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We want you on the air. We want your thoughts as well. Phil on Facebook writes in, if North Korea denuclearizes, will other countries across the globe? You know, it would be an example. It would be an example of what can happen if you take this step, how you could benefit from it. And again, it'd be turning from the East to the West. It's a big ask from North Korea. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people. The Green New Deal and other extreme measures. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
As I've said many times, and I say it to the press, I say it to anybody that wants to listen, I think that your country has tremendous economic potential, unbelievable, unlimited. And I think that you will have a tremendous future with your country, a great leader. And I look forward to watching it happen and helping it to happen. And we will help it to happen.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to the second half hour of Jay Sekulow Live. We are live. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. The main topic, North Korea. Obviously, the president held the first round of meetings with the leader of North Korea today in Vietnam. Take a listen to the president. He talked about what they're really going to be. The main meetings are tomorrow between the two parties, the two nations, if you will, with their leaders there in Vietnam.
We're going to have a very busy day tomorrow, and we'll probably have a pretty quick dinner, and a lot of things are going to be solved, I hope, and I think it'll lead to really a wonderful situation long term. And our relationship is a very special relationship.
So again, that is the president, and he's referring to it's a 12-hour time difference, but those subsequent meetings beginning tomorrow in Vietnam. But again, all of this is very important. The optics, the fact that these two leaders are sitting down together, and Andy, I don't think we can take that away enough. Is maybe people got used to this because it happened once before, but it still kind of sends shivers down my spine to see the president of the United States and the North Korean leader shaking hands, sitting down together, where there has been no direct engagement by those heads of states until President Trump.
Until President Trump opened the door. As President Nixon opened the door to China, so President Trump is opening the door to North Korea. And I think that's very important. And especially, as you say, the optics of seeing this head of a hermit kingdom, as it's been called, North Korea, meeting with the president of the leading nation of the world, the United States of America, and holding out to him the possibility of progress. And I think doing it, and as we said, in Vietnam, that's very important, because holding that possibility of repairing relations with a fractured former enemy, and saying that we can do that, we did this with Vietnam, and we can do this with you, and giving him the hope of economic progress. I noticed, Jordan, that one of the agreements that some of the agreements for the trade deal that Harry alluded to earlier in the program, do you realize that with Vietnam now, we have agreements where the Vietjet is buying 100 Boeing 737s, Bamboo Airways, which is a Vietnamese airline, buying 10 Boeing Dreamliners, the 787, and Vietnam Airlines buying $100 million in services and technologies from Sabre Corporation. These are real facts that Kim Jong-un cannot ignore. And President Trump is saying, you can be part of this economic renaissance with the United States also. That's very important.
Yeah, it is so key. I mean, it's been a significant change. And so with all of this, the optics, the location of where it is, showing Kim Jong-un an example of how the United States can reconcile with a enemy and work together on the economy that benefits everyone, even if you're not in agreement with necessarily their system of government, the structure of their government, or in every single detail of human rights. But I will tell you, a more open North Korea without nuclear weapons would be better for the world. Now, a good question coming in. We'll hold it. We've only got a minute right now. I want to spend some time on this question. If you want to talk to us on air, we're going to start taking all the calls. We come back from this break, really getting into this. We got Skip Ash joining us as well, and Harry Hutchinson. 1-800-684-3110 is the number you call to talk to us on the air with, again, the president and his top national security team, sitting down with the North Korean leadership for the second time in his first term, and the first president to do so, historically getting this organized yet again in another location, an attempt to, one, keep America safer. And by the way, while these talks have been ongoing, there haven't been those ICBM tests that we got so used to under the Obama administration. The same kind of nuclear testing is not going on that we can detect, you know, from the satellites in North Korea. So there's been already positive benefits for the United States that I don't think get talked about enough. We will take your phone calls. We come back. 1-800-684-3110.
The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people. The Green New Deal and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a 5-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. Expose socialism. 2. Prepare critical legal analysis. 3. Show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4. Battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5. Hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110, and we are focused on the North Korea talks that are ongoing right now, the denuclearization talks between the United States and North Korea. But it's not just significant because it's between the U.S. and North Korea, but it's between our two leaders, the President of the United States, the leader of the free world, our Commander-in-Chief, President Trump, the first president in our history to sit down and have direct engagement with a North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, and this is the second time in the first term of this president that they have been able to put together all the logistics, which I cannot even imagine, finding the locations, the security necessary, but also the willingness to sit down and talk and then bring your key advisors in to sit down and discuss paths to peace, to denuclearize, to open up the economy. Right now, I think it's important to point out that all the sanctions that we had on North Korea are still on North Korea, all those economic sanctions. But since we've already seen a benefit for the United States while these talks have been going on, and while they've been going on, what have we stopped having? We've stopped having ICBM tests. We got pretty used to those under the Obama administration. We stopped having those nuclear devices being exploded that you could pick up with the satellites that we have, that we got pretty used to under the previous administrations. So there has been already a national security benefit to the United States. But I want to go to this phone call because I think, you know, it's not just the U.S. Obviously, that's the president's number one priority. But when you're talking about North Korea, you can't ignore China, South Korea, and the region. Lois is calling in from New Jersey on line 3. Lois, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, thank you. My thoughts on the subject are, since North Korea is really tethered to China, are they free to make a change?
Well, let me go to Skip Ash. Skip, during a break, so our Facebook and Periscope audience heard a little bit about it, but you can expand on it. Is that obviously China is playing a key role here, even though they're more behind the scenes at these summits, they played a key role. Remember, Kim Jong-un first went to China before the first summit with President Trump. But you believe that the Chinese support the denuclearization, which would then give the North Koreans that ability not to upset that relationship.
Yeah, I think that although the Chinese are the closest ally with North Korea, the problem the Chinese have is that the North Koreans periodically are not under control. And by their developing of these nuclear weapons and firing these intercontinental-type ballistic missiles over Japan, it has caused the Japanese to rearm. After World War II, the Japanese Constitution limited the armed forces of Japan purely to defensive forces. But given the threat from North Korea, the Japanese now are producing more offensive weapons, and the Chinese do not want that in their neighborhood. So I think the Chinese would be very happy if the North Koreans were to denuclearize. At the same time, remember, China, its economy began to grow when it also changed its economic system to adopt more of a Western capitalistic economic system. So I don't think it would be have any objection to North Korea doing the same thing. And we just saw, and we've discussed already, the fact that Vietnam has done the same thing. And China and Vietnam are two excellent examples of what can happen if you adopt a more Western-oriented capitalistic system and the wealth it creates. And I think the Chinese would be very supportive of that for the North Koreans.
I want to go right back to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. So we're talking about North Korea. We're also talking about the House vote yesterday to, again, block the president's national emergency declaration the border security crisis, the crisis at our border. He declared the emergency pursuant to his power as president, but also pursuant to legislation passed by Congress in 1976, authorizing the president to declare national emergencies. In fact, this president had already declared three ongoing national emergencies before this fourth one. There are 30-plus national emergencies still ongoing, declared by previous presidents. They're not usually an issue, not talked about much, because it's an inherent power, but also a power specifically delegated by Congress to the President of the United States. Though under the legislation, they can block the declaration. Now, you've got to have a veto-proof majority because the president can veto a legislation. The House voted last night. Not surprised they passed it. It's the Democrat-led House by Nancy Pelosi, but they were 40 votes short of a veto-proof majority. They will not be able to find those votes. Only 13 Republicans joined with every Democrat, so there's no outstanding Democrats to add to their number. This means legislatively, the battle from the left to try and stop the president from really protecting our borders and our national security, that battle is not going to really happen in the House and the Senate where it should. Legislatively, they're going to take it, as they already have, to the courts. We believe that the courts will say the process should be in the legislative branch. You have the ability under the law to stop this, but you don't have the votes for it. And if you don't like the law even, you can repeal that law. So, I mean, there's so many options legislatively, but they're again going to rely on liberal judges to try and save what they could not do legislatively. We'll go right to the phones on this issue. Let's go to Idri calling in Nevada on line one. Idri, welcome to JSEC Yo Live.
Thank you for taking my call, Jordan. I definitely agree with the president's handling, first with North Korea. But yes, my question is, those 13 Republicans that voted with the Democrats,
yep.
What solution do they pretend to entertain, if not that of the president?
So I think you talked about this to some extent, Andy. We disagree with them. They believe that the precedent would be wrong. Now, I disagree with them because there's existing legislation. If you take away that existing legislation, a president could still argue that they have authority to declare emergencies under the Constitution.
That's right, Jordan.
But they wouldn't have the legislative backing to make it that much easier. I mean, always in court, it's the easiest when you're not talking about constitutional gray areas or interpreting what commander-in-chief power is in Article 2. The Article 1 branch has given you the power.
That's right. The Congress has given the power to the president. I don't think they have a solution. I think they're afraid of a precedent that is really an apparition without reality there, and that they're afraid of establishing a precedent if they get a left-wing president in who declares a national emergency. But there is a check and balance in the Constitution. You reverse that by legislation and by overriding the presidential veto. So I think they were mistaken in their approach of opposing the president in this. But 13 were convinced and to go along with the Democrats. I think it was a wrong decision. I think it was a mistake, and they shouldn't have done it, in my opinion, because we do have an emergency at the border. The president has found that. The president has the right to find that and to make that determination. And ultimately, I think the courts are not going to intervene because it is not something that courts intervene in. It is what we call non-justiciable. It's not the business of the courts to make the decisions regarding emergency declarations. That is the power of the executive branch of the government, and specifically the president.
If you want to talk to us on air, the number you call is 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. On that point, Harry, the idea that Congress has all these options. They could repeal the actual National Emergencies Act of 1976, which expressly authorizes the president to declare national emergencies. Then you'd have to fight out, you know, constitutional authorities, but not be so direct. Or they could have the votes. If they really believe it was some constitutional crisis, there'd be bipartisan, they could work together. Democrats got control of the House. There's certainly Republicans in the Senate that are not so friendly to the president on a lot of issues, and having already expressed it on this, they can override the president.
I think you're correct. And so I think your substantive analysis is spot on. But it's also important to remember that some of the Republicans who voted to overturn the president's national emergency declaration opposed the president on philosophical grounds. They are indeed libertarians. Libertarians generally support open borders. They no longer refer to illegal aliens as illegal aliens. They call them irregular immigrants to the United States. And so it's very possible that at least some of those Republicans, certainly including Justin Amash, philosophically support open borders. So it's important to note that not all Republicans really support enforcing the laws, A, of the United States, and B, enforcing the Constitution. The president has a constitutional obligation to secure the border and for purposes of ensuring the national security interests of all of the American people.
When we come back, we will take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about what the House did, trying to, again, reject the president's declaration of national emergency. It passed, big asterisk, because the White House already said they would issue a veto, even if the Senate passes it. So then they can override a veto with 2/3, but they were 40 votes short of that 2/3 majority in the House, which means the votes aren't there. So legislatively, they're not going to be able to stop the president. They're going to try to do it through the courts, as per usual, when it comes to the left. We're also talking about North Korea and that historic summit, which will continue into tomorrow between the president and the leader of North Korea. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people, the Green New Deal, and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a 5-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. Expose socialism. 2. Prepare critical legal analysis. 3. Show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4. Battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5. Hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We got a question that came in right now from Dominic on Facebook. Said, I want to know those the list of the 13 Republicans who joined with the Democrats last night in voting to block the emergency declaration by President Trump on the crisis at the border. Every Democrat voted to block the emergency declaration. So easy, if you're a member of Congress and the House is a Democrat, you know where they voted. Here's the 13 Republicans. They all had different reasons for doing so. And again, this vote, though the resolution passed, and it could end up on the president's desk if the Senate were to pass it, White House has said they would issue a veto. To override a veto, you need 2/3. They were 40 votes short of that in the House, so that is not going to happen. But here are the 13 Republican members of Congress. Justin Amash, Michigan's 3rd. Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania's 1st. Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin's 8th. Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington's 3rd. Will Hurd of Texas 23rd. Dusty Johnson of South Dakota, Thomas Massie, Kentucky's 4th, Kathy McMorris Rogers, Washington's 5th, Francis Rooney, Florida's 19th, Jim Sensenbrenner, Wisconsin's 5th, Elise Stefanik, New York's 21st, Fred Upton, Michigan's 6th, and Greg Walden, Oregon's 2nd. Those are the 13 Republicans. And Harry, as you said, they all have different reasons. Some are kind of Republican in name only. Others were former leadership under the Paul Ryan, like Kathy McMorris Rogers, Fred Upton.
Yes. So some of the Republicans face relatively challenging headwinds in their district with respect to their reelection prospects. Others are philosophically opposed to the president's exercise of his national emergency powers. And thirdly, you have a group which opposes the president's declaration on a substantive basis. In other words, they favor some version of open borders. And so, for instance, if you look at such groups as the Cato Institute or other libertarian groups, they don't seem to recognize borders. So in some sense, they don't recognize the sovereignty of the United States. And so they just want the free flow of people, whether they're legal or illegal. Most Americans support legal immigration, not illegal immigration. And so you have many Republicans who are pulled and torn in differing directions. And so you had 13 defections yesterday, and we await to see what will happen when and if the United States Senate takes up this particular measure.
We're going to go right to your phone calls. Let's go to Roy in Minnesota on line one. Roy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hello.
Hi, Roy.
Thanks for taking my call. Regarding Steny Hoyer's statement on reports President Trump will declare a national emergency, February 14, 2019 release, he said, and I quote, in the first sentence, declaring a national emergency would be a violation of the spirit of the laws Congress enacted to deal with actual emergencies by allowing an extraordinary circumvention of our Constitution's framework of checks and balances, unquote. I'd like to ask this question.
Yep.
regarding the spirit of the laws Congress enacted, is this anything that's justiciable?
Well, I mean, they're in court now. They're in court now, mostly on the financing, some on the environmental. I want to play for you the sound from Steny Hoyer. Take a listen, Bite 10.
There is no crisis at the border. The issue tomorrow will be whether there is a crisis of our constitutional adherence, whether there is a crisis because there is a lack of conscience and courage among the members of the House of Representatives and subsequently the United States Senate to stand up for what the founding fathers want. They did not want King George.
I mean, this is absurd coming from Steny Hoyer, who was a supporter of President Obama's executive actions where he said, I'm not a king, but then changed the laws, even though he said I can't change the law on my own, then he did. I mean, this is a president who has legislative authority. But as the caller brought up the spirit of the law issue, Harry, this idea that we may have passed this law and this legislation that gives the president the power to do it, but it violates the spirit because we disagree with the policy.
Absolutely. That's their claim. And it's a claim that is grounded largely in incoherence. Where was Steny Hoyer? Where was Nancy Pelosi when President Obama engaged in several usurpations of the Constitution? President Obama engaged in a policy which was in clear and unmistakable violation of the explicit terms of the statutory provisions regarding immigration. When he created out of whole cloth something called DACA, President Trump is on firm ground. He is exercising both his constitutional and statutory rights under the rule of law. He is protecting American people from drug traffickers, from human traffickers, from illegal caravans which are crossing our border. There has been an absolute increase in the number of individuals, particularly families and unaccompanied minors, over the last couple of years. Those are clear facts that Steny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi prefer to avoid dealing with.
Let's go to Tim calling in from Iowa on line 5. Tim, welcome to JSEC Yo Live. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. Just a quick question in regard to the border wall. I'm in full support of that myself, and it looks evident now that this is going to be taken to the courts, and I really do think that they probably will have a court, you know, a judge that'll want to take that on, probably the Ninth Circuit or wherever, but at any rate, once they go to the courts, so does this mean that President Trump can go ahead with his wall after he vetoes, you know, can he go ahead and start building, or does it have to go through the court system before anything can get started?
So the only part that's going through the court system is, of the $8 billion identified, Andy, is the $3.5 billion identified under the National Emergencies Declaration. So $5 billion is, well, one, Congress authorized $1.3 billion. And then there was additional about $4 billion identified by the executive branch. So the construction will continue because this is only talking about a third of the funding.
That's right. Only the contested portion is going to prevent any construction of the barrier needed so desperately to protect us from the illegal aliens, the drugs, the sex trafficking, the child smuggling, and so forth. And Hoyer's statement that there is no crisis at the border is a ridiculous, stupid remark made by a person who should know better. And to talk about King George when he doesn't want to talk about King Barack really makes me sick.
Just very quickly, let me go back to Skip Ash on North Korea. Skip, what should we be looking out for anything to happen in those the real round of meetings tomorrow?
Well, I think that both sides need something to come out of this. So I think there's going to be at least something symbolic steps ahead that they're going to meet again, because both sides need this in order to keep it going. We're going to see something. I don't know how substantive.
Listen, I think as so long as you can keep this going and they're not testing ICBMs flying through the air and they're not testing nuclear devices and exploding those underground, that's pretty good for the U.S. if you got to continue the talks. We will talk to you tomorrow on JSEC Yo Live. Have a great day. We'll be right back.
The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people. The Green New Deal and other extreme measures. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org.